Okay, and welcome back, everyone. I presume you had some meetings without me. I think I saw some discussion that you might.
There's one meeting at least.
Yeah. I had a good holiday. How are things going?
How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Since last time, not very much, although I've been helping Isan and convinced him not to use Kdevelop and that he can use Windows, and we've installed Cygwin on his computer and we've been trying to compile libmesh with Cygwin, which is going okay.
What's going okay mean? When you either
It was compiling when I left him last.
Okay.
I haven't seen whether it finished.
He since disappeared.
Yeah, I haven't seen. Oh no, he tried to get me on Friday, but I had a lot.
It's either compiled or it doesn't.
Yeah, I know, but he hasn't. Well, no. I've fixed many things that don't compile before. No. I'm sure I can get it. I'm sure I can get it to compile.
Yeah.
I'd be quite confident. At least with Cygwin, even if not MinGW. And I think we're trying MinGW
first. Versus using XLC, which seems to me very difficult.
Yeah.
Which is
a quirky compiler, it seems.
Yeah. I've had
in terms of its response to some, it appears to be standard C++ code that other compilers can handle. It chokes on.
Yeah. The XLC on the IBM is also kind of different to the XLC on the Intel as well, I've noticed. It's different features and things. As far as I could tell, it seemed a bit different.
The Linux seemed very similar to AIX when I used that. Although the linker didn't have different libraries, it seemed to use similar command line arguments.
It was more like there was different features, like whether they handled templates and things on. Because they'd done quite a lot of things for the Mac to get it up to being a frontline compiler, which didn't seem to have trickled into the other one.
There's even less motivation there.
Well, we have a working reaction diffusion problem.
Awesome!
Using a cubic model.
Wow!
Using the last page in there is my simple cell class, which is just cubic. And I mean, the solutions look reasonable. So right now, that's my justification for it's working. I should obviously compare it to a CMS example.
Yeah. What's the performance like? You don't?
It's not taking me much time to run these, I can tell you that. I mean, I can only tell you how I feel at this moment.
Okay,
I feel like I'm waiting forever.
Okay, that's fine. How many cells are you doing in that? What's your tissue?
This is the biggest problem I've ran so far, is the Atria.
Oh, fine.
It's 45,000.
Okay.
And that's quick, actually. It's quite quick.
Good.
And I'm doing 1,000. That's from 1,000 time steps, 0.02 time steps. So it's at 200 milliseconds.
Awesome. Right?
So I got that mesh from Greg. It's a Duke Atria mesh in true good format, and I converted it to UMD, and then I read it in, and then Greg had a note here, which I think is about where it starts.
Sinometric.
Yeah, it's about there, and so that's about 200 milliseconds or so.
Wow.
And then I output it in GMV, which GMV starts to have, I think, problems whenever you're getting to a reasonably sized problem.
Maybe not.
I mean, it hangs.
Yeah.
So
sometimes
it hangs. Not very often, but I mean, it's just a binary. It's all I have.
So can I get you to repeat? Did you mention the step size, time step?
Yeah, I can send you all that if you want. But it was a 0.02 time step.
0.02 in how long simulation?
That was 1,000 steps. So, and it was, I mean, it's definitely a reasonable time, but I think I can, I mean, Greg has this as an old example, and I don't know what I think he actually ran, well, I think he generated some results maybe from, for Andrew and Leo's book, Martin's book.
Yeah.
And I have his files from those simulations, so. But if I was to compare, I think I would just compare with a cube. So, but the nice thing about this is I was going through, is I started with just a square from GenGrid that you can use in LibMesh. And then I was just curious to see how hard it would be going to 3D, so I turned it, actually read in a cube that I had created, and that was, with just a small few changes, that was pretty easy. And then I generated a UNV file.
Oh, so this is built to cube, and this is through the reaction.
I generated a UNV file mesh from Greg's TrueGrid format, and read it in, and it just took about a day to work out a kink, and then just went. So
wow, that's awesome.
Obviously, I was trying to stimulate here on the top part, but it's quite hard to go through and select. I mean, I could have gone through
and
select one of those, but yeah. So
wow,
that was just how to catch everybody using.
This is the sort of way, you know, this is LibMesh in its native form, where we're, you know, he's writing C++ as his control file and then compiling it. So there's no scripting language per se, because you're using the compiled language essentially as a scripting language at this level. And then this is equivalent to this compile, although, I mean, it's got a lot more detail than a compile would for CMS, because a lot of this would have been implemented in code. But it tells you, you know, it's solving the problem, and you can see that it's solving it. And it's got a hard-coded cell model.
Yeah. And that's that on multiple processors
as well? I think it's a single processor, but we have BioLynch has four.
It's got four, but unless you did something, probably just running.
Yeah, I can just run it on. I should try that next round.
And then how did you visualize it?
GMB right now. It's a free cracker.
It's a thing that it automatically puts out.
It's one of their default output formats.
Yeah. Which, I mean, if we were serious, we could make field ML or CMD or EXMO. And that would be quite good.
But Travis was mentioning he was having
some performance issues with the visualization.
So it would be quite handy to have that.
And with this, the solution method that has been used was one of your multiple ones, or is it?
I'm just using the solvers within basically, which I think it's just CG maybe? Default maybe?
I think it defaults GMRes, so it doesn't go twice as fast.
Yeah. It's a monodomain. The monodomain equations are easy to solve because delta T makes it very well conditioned. So
it's using the GMRes
for Yeah. But if I was to do the same simulation but bidomain, I would probably try and hook into PETC AMG code.
Yeah.
For the extracellular matrix.
Well, that's awesome, Travis. That's great.
Yeah. And I think we have multiple ways now to do the boundary conditions.
Oh, good.
There's the penalty method, which was originally used. I've done, to me, is more of a standard mathematical way, and that's to eliminate the
unknowns
and the identity equations on the Dirichlet ones.
Does it leave a row in that's got a 1 on the diagram?
Yeah. It's easier than messing around.
Yes, yeah.
But,
so where's that done?
The nice thing is actually page 5, if you look under boundary conditions.
Oh, yeah.
That chunk of code there originally was about a page and a half.
Mm.
And once I figured out Carl to use condense, ke.condense, that shrunk the code by a significant amount. So
that's,
oh, it's essentially, it's making a, if you have an element matrix, 3x3 element matrix, it puts a 1 on the diagonal.
It sort of means remove the right hand column.
Yeah, okay.
So, but it can fix up your right hand side and your matrix.
Oh, okay. So you're saying I've dealt with worst condition and eliminate this equation
by
just making the idea.
In this element matrix, this point is a Dirichlet point, so fix up the matrix from the right hand side versus going, I had a series of.
Trying to zero out
right.
That's a function, essentially a function call to the
Libmesh. To something in Libmesh, Oh, that's great.
So the ME1's a matrix and condense operates on that matrix with the arguments.
So this is running mono domain at the moment that I'm looking at, even though it's called mono domain.
Yeah, it's going to be done.
But is it worth making an example at this point of this? Is it?
I think so. I mean, that's what I was talking to Carl about earlier, is we've got a parabolic problem.
This adds boundary conditions and adds an integration of a cell model.
I think it's worth
it. Yeah, so I think it's worth an example.
Okay. Maybe if the cube, you can leave the other code in there, but the cube, it reduces the dependencies, I guess,
the time, the solution time for this problem.
That's what we're saying. He doesn't know except it was fast. it didn't become an issue.
Yeah, we need to
formally have an example.
Far off compared parabolic problem to grid based FEM and CMIS. And this now allows us to compare
we're using problems. Yeah, that's right.
So we can run a cube with a stimulus on one face and let it go across and compare that to.
So what we were running in CMIS.
Do you want, I'm quite happy to try and find some time to put in this. I've got a lot of people asking me to do things at the moment, but I am quite keen to do this. Do you want me to do exporting to CMGUI, or do you want me to do something more?
I think that will be handy soon.
I can tell you it's a lot slower. This is not a very big problem. Mark and I are looking at problems with many, many more than that. And we can move things around quite easily. So,
it's fine.
We don't have to be very keen on that because it's still demonstrating the linkage.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing that there's a list of things, but the other one is replacing this with open cell. Just for a simple cubic model, even, which I think we have some code that has started us down the path.
Xavier quickly put something together.
Yeah, and you don't, because you get it as a separate class, so that is, it's a huge, you're not with
you. Yeah, I mean, if
that.
You look at page 2, where I just have solve reaction.
Which is the same in the function that he declared.
Right. But I wanted to have a bidomain class with bidomain.reaction.solve or something. And bidomain.parabolic.solve or bidomain.elliptic.solve. So that's what I was wanting.
I think we'll get to that. I think we just want to do a few more of these.
Yeah.
I think you'll be able to do that.
So then all of these things in here will be, in particular in terms of in between the loop over time, everything in that would be somehow a part of the bidomain class.
So I guess the design here, Peter, I guess is what we're getting at, is that we've just said, explicitly write everything out, and it can get very verbose and long, but what we should be able to do, and I think we can, is take the common code between this and maybe another bidomain or whatever, and start to write classes which encapsulate that information, and then some of this should then disappear into that, and then particularly things like this where you're choosing between parabolic or elliptic or whatever as switches, you'll be able to set those in one place and it'll choose the appropriate class, which will have either of those two options in it. And so you get more vectors when you have bidomain, obviously, or something, and those would you just be able to say now do it with bidomain and it would solve the same problem but add more vectors and things.
If I created the class so that one class is created, one cell model is created for everything's constant. So we were talking about this with cell now, that if you created one object for every node, that could become
prohibitive.
So this is just simple. So it doesn't address that.
You are making one for every...
No, just one period.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there, so there are no state...
Without, yeah,
oh, it because it's due, because it's got no state variables, yeah.
Yeah. So I guess you could actually compare, that'd be an interesting thing, is the time to do a fits in a GUMO and throw in just a recovery variable.
Mm.
Recovery variable new, recovery variable old. I'll get that for all the nodes. And then... You have to have 40,000 classes versus one.
Well, I'm afraid of that a little. We have to do that design very carefully, which is the same discussion we were having last hour.
Yeah. I mean, the common situation with these, when you get into the more complex sub-models, is that you might have 100 or more parameters that describe your cell model, of which maybe two very spatially.
Yeah.
And it's the same model you're running. So
yeah, I understand that. Yeah. And we have to make sure we share all that information.
Yeah.
And vary as well as we can.
Yeah.
That's what the debate is.
And you want to pick, you want to be able to pick that particular one that's spatially varying off a interpolation scheme based on a finite interpolation.
Or some of them might be even specified every cell. But I mean, if they're a state variable, we need to keep a record of them for every cell, even if that's a temporary thing. Yeah. It's still part of that cell model.
Sure. The issue of the state variables is a separate issue to the parameters, and there will be a...
We treat them all the same way, but yeah.
It sounds like if you have a cell, you pretty much know in advance which ones are going to be spatially varying and which ones aren't. So we'd probably have even a different cell type if we had different numbers varying spatially. And just trying to think of an efficient way to implement a parameter that could either be constant all over the space or could be spatially varying. And it's easiest just to make a different cell type. Anyway, that's just implementation details.
Or you have to instantiate it with templates and stuff and be able to say.
Yeah.
So it's one cell type, right? The parameters vary.
Yeah. It's a typical situation. You may also occasionally have different cell types.
Yeah.
You've got a Purkinje fiber.
But I think if you've sorted out that, so you I don't think that would be a big issue. I mean, the first one's the one where you've got to just make sure it works well. You can afford to do n equals 2 times that sort of infrastructure, that would be okay.
It all seems like you, I don't know how you guys have been envisaged doing this, but have a simple, some cell that represents like a cell and then another class that encapsulates that has like a multitude of cells.
Yeah, or there's
so
two ways.
You could.
Or you make just an array of lots of cells and just make sure that each of those objects shares the stuff that it needs to. So there's those two ways of doing it. And I think you do have to think carefully about the design.
So if you have less stuff in your class,
yeah,
and your objects are cheaper to...
Well, you should be able to make your stuff almost... You should be able to make it very little over here. And that's, you've just got to be very careful about the way you do it to make sure you don't add over here.
So it's okay to have 40,000 classes.
Yeah, as long as you're just sharing most of this stuff.
Yeah.
And it should do, but you've got to think about it carefully, and you've got to think even different compilers may treat it differently. So you've got to then look at the range of computers you're looking at and look at, make sure you know what it's going to do.
Mm-hmm. So
it's just a process.
There are certain things that make classes more expensive to work with. Having functions that need to be declared at runtime, is that it? Or?
That are choosable at runtime,
So you just avoid those types of things as much as possible.
But the easiest mechanism for sharing all these things is to actually have a runtime lookup of all those things, and then they all point at the same one because they're all the same.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just one redirection, it's not that costly. I don't think you necessarily know. But those are the sort of things that Chris was saying not to use C++. Again, you could do them all as static class functions and stuff. The trade-off then is the ease at which you might be able to then take that existing class and convert it into one where another variable varies easily.
Mm-hmm.
that sort of thing. That's where you, if you hard code the way those things are all, oh, this is a static and I'm always going to treat it as not part of the class because I know it doesn't vary, and then you want to change it into one that does, and then you're making that more difficult.
We're giving ourselves types of generated automatically, it doesn't really seem
to be. Sure. Cool.
And I talked to Carl for the meeting about steps, noise. We didn't know what we should go next. We wrote down kind of a list of things.
Okay.
I talked to Greg once, told me that he thinks he has information about the different features of the mesh and they represent different parts of the atria. And then I can maybe get that information from him and vary parameters based on that. So that would be first step in terms of reading in some kind of mesh data.
Are there ventricles to go with this mesh?
No.
So this is the one from
Henrik's
crate.
Because there would be some value in just saying we did solve on the whole thing.
Sure.
But is there actually a mesh that has?
Well, I don't know.
So I don't. No, I don't.
Right.
Another point is that the two are only coupled through. It's not as if you're just propagating
down
the beam individuals. You've got actually another connection system to connect.
Well, are those sort of nerve fibers? Oh, so the Purkinje fiber network is triggered off the AV node off here.
Yeah.
Oh, so it directly innervates them rather than being through the tissue propagation?
No, it is through the tissue propagation, but the tissue propagation from here, which is set off by the sinoatrial node, then changes the potential in the AV node, actual ventricular node. When that fires, it then
runs
down
the
other Purkinje and down to the other one.
And sees the points through down in the wall.
Yeah.
So it kind of gets back to my other point that I have the ability now to export any mesh from CMIS.
Yeah.
So I can export a stomach mesh and test on it, heart mesh, and then into the UMB format, read them into here, and do the same type of thing. It's just the mesh only.
It's a reading and format that has universal, I think.
So you did that by sort of modifying an EX node, an EXM, or?
Right now, what I've done is I export the EX node in Excel.
And you've got a script?
I have a script that does it. It's just because I'm lazy. But you can easily just... and actually, Greg has, I think... No, he doesn't. Greg has a way to read in TrueGrid files, but not to export them. So you could take that same script that I created and instead create a then export matrix or something, export mesh or something.
I mean, again, politically, it would be a benefit. I mean, if we had something that we call field ML that we used as an interchange and read and wrote it, then that would,
I agree.
Be,
I
that
think
would politically
yeah,
helpful.
I agree. I think. But I mean, there's, you could argue that there's a limit to how they represent fields easily.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is nice in general. So these guys have done it in generalized things. Comfortable with this.
Is that what you've just been talking about?
No, we didn't get to talk about it.
Okay.
But he has to do it before Sunday because he's going to present it on Monday. In Brussels.
No, I'm not presenting this. It's just a talk. Okay.
So you would export a field or something? Or you would just say...
It would be the same data as what you're doing here.
Yeah,
coordinates is a field.
Yeah. Okay,
geometry
is right.
A field.
Small changes to it called .fml.
No, it's XMLized the EX node, which is what I did before.
How much longer do we have Peter with us? Because we need to talk about resourcing.
And there is an IT meeting at 12.
Discussing
and I'm supposed to attend for it.
Where are they meeting?
Oh, well, I guess they think they're meeting here.
So one issue is that there's the guy.
Recording for the moment, can I just cover
as while we're still recording?
Yes.
Sounds like Jake has got busy with something else at the moment, or do we still think he's going to be that
helpful? It's still good to have him involved in this, yeah,
okay.
Because he is very dependent on
them. Okay, yeah. Okay, so we'll talk to him.
I think he's been he was watching what Isan was doing and letting Isan try and make some of these decisions. I think he was guiding Isan, but
okay.
When I was helping Isan on Friday or Thursday, he's kind of looking over his shoulder.
Okay, so we probably need to just give him something to do. Okay, let's stop this. Yeah.